is her, you know, 30 years plus. You know, and they're probably wanting to get on with their lives. It seems great.
Okay, it looks like we're ready. So we're going to start this meeting. This is the Thursday, May 20th, 2010, Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting. And it looks to me as though we probably have a quorum, but maybe Mr. Beaton can call a roll and we can confirm that.
Okay.
Mr. Costello?
Here.
Mr. Ehring?
Here.
Mr. Gehring?
Here.
Ms. Lucy?
Here.
Mr. Myers?
Yes, here.
Mr. Runnels?
Don't see
Mr.
Either.
Wallace?
You got a politic.
You have a quorum.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Beaton, for that. And this is the time for public comment. I'm curious if there's anyone in the audience who would like to stand up and ask questions or make a comment. Please step forward, give us your name and address and what your issue is.
Hi, my name is Steph Wald, and I'm with Central Coast Salmon Enhancement. And I'd just like to let you all know that this Saturday in Arroyo Grande is Waterfest. Waterfest is an annual event sponsored by the Slo County Partners for Water Quality, and the NGOs and municipalities in the county get together once a year and help the rest of the county understand more about the need for water quality, surface water, as well as groundwater. And we hold a variety of activities for children and families, as well as barbecue, and a variety of entities come with tables for the purpose of education and outreach. So please join us this Saturday in Arroyo Grande in Heritage Square Park, which is where the band shell is, and I believe the hours are 11 to 3. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mrs. Wald. Any questions for Ms. Wald before she gets too far away? Seeing none, onward. Everybody get a chance to look at their meeting minutes of March 18th?
Yes.
Any questions, corrections, changes, motion?
I'll move. We accept the minutes as submitted.
Second.
Any discussion on that? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? There are no opposed. All right, it looks as though we are to Mr. Beaton for the operations report.
Okay. I distributed to you tonight the monthly operations reports prepared by Ron Coleman, the water system superintendent. I believe you're missing some of those reports at our previous meeting, so I included reports for December through April in the packet there. Current Lopez Lake elevation is 499.55 feet. The lake's 62.9% full with 30,971 acre-feet of water in storage. Rainfall to date is approximately 29.75 inches, measured at the Lopez Dam. Downstream release from the dam to Arroyo Grande Creek is 1.5 million gallons per day. Lopez plant's producing 3.75 million gallons per day, and 2 million gallons per day of state water being delivered to the system. Lopez Lake water quality is good. Visibility is 8.5 feet. Algae counts are low. Lopez terminal water quality is also good with visibility of 13 feet, low algae counts, and the untreated raw water has a threshold odor number of 6. Treatment plant is functioning properly, producing good quality water. Filter effluent turbidities range from 0.012 NTU to 0.018 NTU. It's about a tenth or a fifth of the limit. Delivered water has an odor of 1.3. The sludge bed capital improvement project is scheduled to go before the Board of Supervisors for award contract to R. Baker on May the 25th. Work is also continuing on the chlorine dioxide batch tank system. Tom Trott, our capital projects engineer, indicates we're close to a proposal on that project. And that concludes my operations report.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Beaton. And any questions for Mr. Beaton on the operations report from anybody?
No.
Seeing none at the committee, anyone in the audience have any comments or questions? Again, seeing none, going once, twice. All right. Given that, now we've had a request to adjust the agenda to move item F up ahead of item A. And as far as I can tell, that's all right. But let me ask if there are any concerns at committee level about making that change.
None. Here.
Anybody? Seeing none, I guess we'll move. Item F, HCP status discussion is up now, and I guess Mr. Byrd is going to take that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doug Byrd, Public Works staff. As your committee is aware, we've been working on a habitat conservation plan for a number of years, and I think approximately since 1998 we've been working with the National Marine Fisheries Service in regard to a reservoir operations model and downstream release flow model for future operations of the Lopez Project and as part of our requirements under the Habitat Conservation Plan. In your packet tonight, there is a memo that we've provided. It's just a little staff report on the Habitat Conservation Plan and where we are right now. We've also included a copy of a letter from Mr. Anthony Spina, who's nice enough to be with us this evening, and will be available for questions. Essentially, what we've been doing is a back and forth between us and our consultants, Stetson engineers, and trying to develop a flow model that is going to meet all of the needs of the Lopez Project for your contracting agencies, as well as the environment and as well as the downstream users. And this has been part of the process. And as part of that, we submitted a Stetson report to Mr. Spina. And then back in January of 27th of this year, along with the draft technical memorandum, which was entitled Methodology and Results for Estimating Daily Flows for Different Lopez Lake Scenarios. In response to that, we received a letter from Mr. Spina, and a copy of that is attached to your staff report, and hopefully you've all had a chance to take a look at that. So we had some questions about that report from that letter from Mr. Spina, and so we put together a few questions, and we just got them off to him yesterday. And my apology for the delay in getting those to you not until yesterday, but we've had a number of conflicting priorities. But anyway, be that as it may, I believe each of you has a copy of the questions that we submitted to Mr. Spina in regard to his last letter. That's part of your packet. So with that, I think what we'd like to do let's go ahead and proceed reviewing through the questions and then asking Mr. Spina if he would mind responding.
Yes, please do.
Okay. With that, we'll go into the first question, which was consideration of multiple demands. And if is it your preference that I just read through these, or? It's a little button on there.
Chairman Goering, members of the committee, Pavel Ogren, Public Works Director. Maybe I could just paraphrase each of the questions.
Thank you.
You know, Doug was nice to say we had some conflicting interests on how long it took to get these questions out. I guess I'll provide a little bit more about background and the detail. In working with both Katie and Doug, as you know, who are, you know, lead staff on the HCP efforts, we actually went through a number of different rounds of developing questions. From, you know, different staff within the department. And it was really to go through a more detailed effort of sort of screening the questions and saying then, okay, which of these questions are sort of more appropriate for our one-on-one dialogue with NOAA? Which ones are more appropriate, you know, technical questions that we would be following up with the TAC? But then we're trying to say, okay, how do we, you know, bring some questions that we think are relevant to the Zone 3 Advisory Committee in our dialogue. And so what we attempted to do with these questions in general is to pose them sort of in the big picture in terms of what's the approach, what's the impacts on the schedule, what are the next steps associated with the HCP. You know, are we really sort of on the same page? And one of the challenges then in developing these kind of questions is we try to take care to not make them antagonistic or whatever. Sure. But, you know, these processes have some sort of, you know, often have inherent types of, you know, challenges associated with them or whatever. So in terms of the first question then, consideration of multiple demands, That one is the idea that it's our general belief that why we're in the HCP process is related to the operations of the dam. You know, its original construction was pre-endangered species act. Even the remediation project had a Section 7 biological opinion and NOAA review on it. So when, you know, and the HCP itself is a result of our reapplication for our water rights permit with the State Water Board. So, in his letter, Anthony was correct. He expressed a concern about our approach overall, which is the approach of trying to consider the multiple demands on the water sources as opposed to sort of singularly what's best for the fish. And so also the idea that, you know, the whole process of going through the HCP, there was not an HCP for a coastal stream on steelhead trout that, you know, we could sort of follow as a boilerplate. So in any case, the first question is very much focused on the idea that, you know, we recognize that there's multiple demands on the water supply itself. And so the approach to the HCP is trying to address that all. But I guess maybe it's falling a little bit short on the scientific side of it in terms of addressing what's best for steelhead. So I guess that, Anthony, would be, you know, just sort of a general on feedback on our approach where we're addressing the multiple demands. And then along those lines then, too, is that in maybe taking a different approach, what are the expectations that we might see? It seemed like in some of the review, you were concerned about peak flows and what months the peak flows were coming through. And anyways, it's, you know, this is sort of the lead in the general approach to the HCP on considering multiple demands. And yeah.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Anthony Spina. I'm with National Marine Fisheries Service in Long Beach. And I was asked once again to attend this meeting to answer some questions regarding the habitat conservation plan for operation of Lopez Dam. And I did receive a printout from the county yesterday evening when I returned from being gone all day. And I did read this handout, if you will, and I identified essentially three questions. And so I am prepared to address those specific questions. And with regard to the first element that Director Ogren brought up, it's true, the National Marine Fisheries Service did bring attention to the statement that appeared in the county's letter that indicated the county's current approach is to balance competing demands on the available water resources. And although I believe that's an expected effort, it's an effort that we expect the county to undertake, that the purpose of NIMS calling attention to that specific statement was just to remind the county of what's required by the regulations. In particular, the regulations that NIMS follows to issue an incidental take statement requires the administrator of NOAA to make a determination that, in part, the conservation program will minimize the take of steelhead. So because the regulations does require that specific component, we felt it incumbent upon us to remind the county, in particular, to call attention to the fact that although it's noble and expected that the county will take actions to balance competing water resources demands, it's also important to take into account the requirements of the regulations. The whole point, the whole reason why we're engaging in this effort is ultimately and hopefully to get to a point where NIMS can issue an incidental take permit to the county. Currently, we are in what's called a pre-application phase, which essentially means that we function somewhat as a consultant to the county. We give them advice on how to prepare the draft application. So as part of and consistent with that pre-application phase, again, we felt it important to remind the county what's required by the regulations.
I guess a follow-up on that one then. In terms of a lot of the flow analysis that has been, do you think that means that taking that analysis and augmenting it with a scenario that is much just simply much more favorable and almost exclusively to the benefit of the species, and then from there we go to a step of saying, okay, how do we consider that scenario versus the ultimate recommended scenario and balancing, you know, various needs and purposes, I guess?
Well, the generalized approach that NIMS often applies in these situations is to first develop an understanding of what the effects of the action are. And once we have a clear understanding of the effects, we work with the applicant to come up with a program that will minimize the effects. Ultimately, we get to a point where the applicant has done everything they can possibly or is willing to do to minimize the effects, and then we take a look at what we refer to as the residual effects. And then based on the type and amount of residual effects, we advise the applicant on how to proceed from there. Again, that's the general approach. With regard to the specific situation that we're dealing with the Lopez Dam HCP, based on the last submittal we obtained from the county, we're still not entirely clear on the potential effects of the operating criteria on steel, and that's why we've asked for additional information. So until we get that additional information, we're not in a position to say how close is the county to fully minimizing or partially minimizing the effects.
Okay, I understand. And then that, I think, is addressed in, you know, within your letter there was 12 questions that were sort of more detail-oriented, and that's what we've asked Stetson Engineering to respond, provide recommendations so that we can follow up. And Doug, you were indicating that you thought Stetson might be done within the next couple weeks.
It's my understanding that the Stetson analysis and recommendations should be in hand at the staff level by the middle of next week, at which point in time we'll take a look at it.
Okay, so that gives us plenty of time then to take that next detailed step to bring it back to the technical advisory committee, maybe even two opportunities there before coming back to, you know, zone three with Stetson's responses and recommendations on you know, those particular details in terms of the next step.
Are you going to ask all these questions, Pavel?
Well, I think that one approach might be, depending on, you know, how your chair wants to pursue it, that, you know, in my mind that was sort of a reasonable discussion, that first question. If you're, you know, committee has some follow-up questions on that first topic.
I think that's a good idea. Yeah. Let's find out if the committee's got any questions on that first part before we move on then. Mr. Wallace, anything?
Anthony, I had a question about the procedure here. As I understand it, we're in the pre-application phase of the process. And your role at this point, or the agency's role at this point, is to give the county advice on the adequacy of their application. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What prevents the county at some point in saying, and I know that we have some technical details that we need to furnish you in several weeks here, but what prevents the county at some point in saying, you know what, this is our application, and then you guys take it up from there? Are you saying that you would reject the application at that point, or would you process the application?
We're required to process the application. And by processing it, I mean basically submitting it to our formal procedure for evaluating it, both in terms of NEPA and Section 7. And Section 7 is a potential area where there could be a hang-up. Specifically, as part of our role in this pre-application phase, we are alerting the county on potential issues related to take of the species or adverse effects to their habitat. We're basically looking ahead in this process. So if we're seeing red flags, if you will, we're going to advise the county that they need to address those red flags, because we're trying to avoid a situation of getting into the formal processing phase, going through the consultation, and ending up with a jeopardy or adverse mod biological opinion. So we would be, since NIMS is issuing a permit, we're engaging in a federal action. And as required by the Endangered Species Act, we're required to essentially consult with ourselves formally under Section 7. So because of that, the outcome of that consultation would be a biological opinion. But the specific conclusion of that biological opinion is unclear yet, because we haven't gone down that path. But again, we're trying to be forward-looking. We're trying to assist the county get to a point where we feel they're likely to be successful in getting that permit. But getting back to your main point, Mr. Wallace, you're absolutely correct. At any time, the county may say, we're done talking to NIMS. We've defined our application. Here it is. Please process it. And we'll process it.
Maybe one follow-up question.
Yes, please.
What would be the result of a adverse determination or opinion? And where do you think subjectively an incidental take permit would wind up in terms of the amount of fish that would be allowed to be taken in this project compared to what you might require under an adverse opinion?
I didn't understand the second part of the question.
Well, I guess I wasn't clear. We have two options. One is to go ahead and complete the process in accordance with the directions that we've been going on for so long now, and that is to supply more and more information that completes the application in a way that maybe eliminates some red flags. But if we said at some point, okay, this is the application, and you processed it, and you had an adverse opinion, what would the result of that adverse opinion be on the county? And second part of the question is, subjectively, you've been involved with these things and numerous times. What kind of a take do you envision that you'll wind up with for a project if we were to proceed through the process with a favorable opinion?
Okay, thanks for clarifying, Mr. Wallace. So with regard to the first part of the question, the result of an adverse MOD or a jeopardy opinion is that NIMS could not issue the permit. It would preclude us from issuing the permit because the Endangered Species Act precludes a federal action agency from undertaking an action that has the potential to jeopardize the long-term survival of a listed species or result in the destruction or adverse modification of the species habitat. So our action in this specific situation would be issuance of a permit. But because in according to this discussion we're having, that the biological opinion is determined jeopardy or adverse mod, we could not issue that permit unless the county was willing to adopt a reasonable and prudent alternative that was specified in the biological opinion. So we have the ability, NIMS has the ability to specify what we refer to as an RPA. It's an acronym that stands for Reasonable Prudent Alternative in the biological opinion. It basically represents an alternative to a proponent's project. Now, with regard to the second part of your question, you know, I would expect that there would be some allowable take authorized if we got to a point where NIMS issued a non-jeopardy or non-adverse opinion. So that's happened before. That happens quite a bit, where we issue a biological opinion for a whole range of activities, and it's not uncommon for NIMS to authorize some level of take. It's just that tipping point, you know, that's really the gray area at this point. And so,
no idea where that tipping point would be?
Yeah, I just don't have specific examples to point to where that tipping point to be. You know, as I suppose if we use the Lopez situation as an example, altering the species' ability to migrate is a big deal. This critter has evolved, if you will, under the natural flow regime. So what that means is it migrates up rivers during certain conditions, certain times of the year. And those certain conditions and times of the year are tied to the river flows, the pattern and magnitude of flow. So if man comes in and changes that pattern and magnitude of flow, it sends the critter into a tailspin. They're not used to it because they haven't evolved in those conditions. So if there's an anthropogenic activity that's changing the habitat of the species, that's a major problem. That's why we continue to harp on the flow regime. That's why we've continued to recommend that we use that as the basis for the conservation program, and then once we get that in place, we move forward onto the other elements. So that's a key tipping point, is the habitat requirements of the species. And our goal at this point is not to get too deep in the weeds, but rather just to come up with some reasonable pattern and magnitude that we think the critter can live with and that we can monitor and adjust over time through the adaptive management program. So we recognize we have to be flexible. We're willing to be flexible. We do this sort of thing with water agencies a lot. We know we have to balance competing needs, but we also must fulfill the regulations. So overall, at this point, we're just trying to come up with something that's reasonable and that represents a ecologically meaningful program for the species.
Mr. Ehring.
Well, I'd just like to ask the county, the requests that have been made by the federal government in our last go-around, how long would it take to basically accomplish these? I mean, there's an alternative here is to go through with the thing or to say, okay, we've already done that as best we can. But are the requirements requested unattainable?
Okay, so Stetson Engineering is going to provide us a response that Doug is estimating that we're going to get next week to address the details. And so in those responses and their recommendations, we'll make sure that those include schedule and other types of implications and then work with the TAC and come back and report on that specific question at the next advisory committee meeting.
Okay, so when you get this answer back, you have a better understanding
correct.
Of whether or not we can accomplish these in a reasonable length of time.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Myers.
Yes. Mr. Spina, I'm wondering, since I'm sitting on this Zone 3 board and primarily concerned about water supply to my city and the other people that contract for this water, we're focusing our focus right now is on the dam and the water supply release from the dam. And I have a hunch or a feeling based on what I've read from other reports that if the downstream mechanism, if all these streams were in their natural condition, that the water release from the dam currently would be more than adequate for the steelhead under their natural conditions. So are we going to reach a point where we fight about this dam for another, I don't know, X number of months or years, and then finally we say, well, you've done all you can on the dam now, and we're going to let you release a certain amount of water because that's all you can do or whatever the result is. And then we got all these creeks that have all kinds of obstacles between the bottom of the dam and the ocean. Nobody's fault, but everybody's has been participating in the last 150 years on that problem. What do we do then? Are we going to now still have to release all the water to overcome those obstacles, or are we going to have some way we might find to get some water saved for our cities? Do you have any take on what we do next?
Well, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, I'm not sure it was posed too well, but
okay.
The question, we're working on the dam and releasing the dam, and I have a concern that if we released a whole bunch of water, twice what we're releasing now, that wouldn't be enough to preserve for a viable fish habitat to get the fish up and back down because of all the obstacles between the dam outlet and the ocean. What do we do then? Are we still going to, as Zone 3 water needers, going to have to fight that battle too, the downstream battle as well? Or is that something else that's totally out of what we're talking about? I wonder where we go next after we get the dam issue fixed, if we can't.
Well, again, the hope is that we will get to a point where we can issue an incidental take permit to the county. And presuming that the conservation program is functioning properly, there won't be anything left to do relative to Operation of Lopez. But again, I want to emphasize that the Habitat Conservation Plan must be functioning properly.
But what if the point is, what if we can't release enough water to make it work properly? Then what happens to the water supply to our five cities?
Well, I've made this statement many times, and I suspect I'm going to have to make it again.
Yeah, well,
National Marine Fisheries Service is not interested in draining the reservoir. We recognize that the water has important critical uses to the county and the people that depend on that water. So with that in mind, our approach in working with the county has always been to strike a balance,
yeah.
A balance between the needs of the community and the needs of the resource.
Yeah.
So that's the way we're going to continue to do business.
I wasn't trying to be accusatory,
yeah.
Mr. Spinn. I was
yeah.
just trying to get a take on where
right.
this is going. So
yeah.
thank you.
Yeah.
Just that there was a second part, which I think related to downstream impediments.
Yes.
And, Doug, the part of the proposal in the the draft HCP right now is to commit a certain amount of dollars in the budget every year in order to fund some stabilization efforts or some of the other downstream efforts. And maybe you can just briefly cover what's been in the HCP for
the initial, we call it the initial final draft that was submitted to the agencies in 2004 did specify that we would set aside a certain amount of money every year that would be utilized for either habitat enhancements, such as improvements of spawning gravels, maybe restoration of riparian zones, also in-stream constructs for making pools and other things that are suitable for the fish. And then also the other one, the big one, was is removal of fish passage barriers, and there are a number of those. One that's been identified as being a major issue is the Arroyo Grande Gauge, which is just upstream of the town of Arroyo Grande. And, in fact, we've been working with Central Coast Salmon Enhancement, the Arroyo Grande Watershed Forum, on a project that they've been working on with Fish and Game to come up with a solution to that particular passage barrier. So,
in my recollection was something about maybe two different funding pools, each at $50,000 a year, and then as the funding was accumulated, then we can move forward with projects.
That's correct.
But in view of the magnitude of the problem, that seems like a small amount of money to solve the downstream problem. Is if I've got a copy of this, ladies, of salmon enhancement study about the downstream barriers, and there's just a whole bunch of them, they're saying, and it would take a whole lot of money to put it back to its natural conditions, it seems to me like.
Yeah, and we agree. The issue is, in terms of the downstream barriers, what really is the appropriate obligation of the Zone 3 water agencies? And so we recognize that funding scenario would not, you know, would fall short of all the things that might be done in order to, you know, enhance the habitat in the creek and everything. But over the long term, you know, they would add up and a lot would be done. Yeah. And then looking to augment it with grants or efforts of some of the other agencies and NGOs.
No, I wasn't suggesting it was the county's sole obligation, but somebody needs to take the lead, and I was hoping the county was doing that, and perhaps you are. And I'm well aware of what you do in the county, and I appreciate your efforts. But I just had a question, so I just wanted to get something out on the table so we don't ignore it.
Right. And I think that, in a little bit of a way, that's a good transition into some of the other topics that are listed on our questions, because one of the big downstream issues is really the levee system itself.
Yes.
So the study area of the HCP, you know, really basically goes down to the levee system, and it doesn't go all the way down to the ocean. And it's our hope that the waterway management plan that we're doing right now for the levee system, the EIR, knowing that we're going to be pursuing, you know, federal consultations through a Section 7 on the operations of the levee, that that's an appropriate sort of boundary between the HCP and what the county is doing on the levees, in part because, you know, in our mind, in terms of who's paying for what, it's really Zone 1 and 1A. That needs to be paying for the work associated with the levees and what needs to happen within those. Anthony, this was sort of characterized under the question of, you know, I understand that, as you stated, that the primary thing that you're looking at is the flow regime, because that's like the number one issue, I guess, on, you know, in addressing the needs of the species. And yet it's a little bit challenging because, as then we get into other sections, we're concerned that, you know, other issues then might create, again, you know, further scheduling issues before we can get it wrapped up. So I guess this is more of a request than anything else. But in our mind, we've always had sort of the biggest concern about the boundaries of the HCP and wondering whether or not that was ever going to be deemed to be adequate or not. And there's a little bit of where, you know, as the public works director, I really wanted to make sure that we're proceeding with the waterway management plan and all the efforts associated with Zone 1 and 1A before asking you to look at that. And obviously it's not an issue that we would expect you to answer tonight because it's a you know, something that needs to look at seriously and everything. But I guess our hope is that we're as we're proceeding with Stetson and looking at those 12 issues, we might get a little bit earlier feedback on that boundary issue, because I think that's the biggest thing in terms of how might the HCP morph, you know, as we move into the future.
Mr. Costello, do you have any questions before we move on?
No, I've got no questions at this time. I may have something a little bit later.
Okay. Ms. Lucy?
Well, I don't know who this should be directed to. I'm very new on this board. So so if a lot of effort is going in around the dam to releases to protect the steelhead, what happens farther downstream? Because the creek dries up in certain areas and there's a lot of beach traffic and stuff. My understanding, doesn't the fish have to go all the way to the ocean?
Yes, ma'am, the fish does.
How does it do that? Does it walk or, you know, because it's not going to swim at certain times of the year.
Yeah, well, steelhead do require water to migrate. And you highlighted a couple of points. This critter migrates during periods of elevated flows. And so that's one thing we're trying to build in the HCP to have. The timing. Reason.
Dollar.
For some. How do we make
one. On the Anthony.
So this important. Contacting free slope. A resource. The opportunity. Maybe some.
And Mr. McGee. Of the day. Reservation.
Dam. Follow up. Particular. us was
you know, potential.
Spend much time.
We're not. Was the effect.
we've reviewed. Exist. Stream. Elves. Several questions. We do have to. Of that doc.
these activities.
That one in the...
So...
important.
That is third. board. We are sending.
To our comes back.
Make sure maybe able woman.
This list.
Meeting. party or should does, in fact,
probability. That was a lot. Some years. If we're trying Lopez. Go ahead, try. time. And it's sort of like
been in operation.
Of augmentation. At no time. Associated with the
quite sure that
to date
audience.
Hours. So over.
Given that we're up.
Will be some.
Did we get the...
Mr.
full committee.
To know. He's got some.
View report. Found. Drain and dry. Meetings with and improve. Oh, I see.
for area. Which based on the on the
and
and that treatment.
We should go.
Recent.
But Okay.